This week on Making Waves, we're delving into a captivating tale spawned by Neil Hathaway. Imagine Almería, a sun-soaked Spanish province transformed into Europe's orchard against all odds. Those sprawling plastic-covered greenhouses churn out 3.5 million tons of fresh produce yearly. But here is the twist. It's not all sunshine and tomatoes. Join us as we unravel the story of how Almería's success is soaking up more than just rainwater. We'll explore the darker reality of environmental havoc, water scarcity, and the social imbalance that hitched a ride on this agricultural success train. So, grab your headphones and buckle up for a ride through the vibrant fields and complex realities of Almería. The big question we are tackling: could this flourishing paradise be facing its own downfall? Stick around as we peel back the layers of this captivating narrative. I am Vincent Ede, and this is Making Waves. Today, I'm thrilled to have Neil Hathaway join us on the podcast. Neil is not just an incredible photographer, but also a dedicated researcher, pursuing a Master of Arts degree in photojournalism from the University of the Arts, London, and a PhD in conservation and environmental science from the University of Leeds. Now, let's dive into the heart of the matter. Neil, as a photographer, you visually capture the landscapes of Almería. What visually struck you the most during your visit? And how did those visual elements convey the intersection of agriculture and environmental challenges in the region?
Thanks very much, Vincent. I work with both traditional camera methods and drone photography, and it's the drone photography that's given me a sort of unique bird's eye view of this region. And the most shocking thing that I saw is being photographed by other people already, like Edward Batinsky, and that's the sheer scale of these greenhouses. They're not like the ones that you see in your garden. They're not made out of glass. These are essentially small fields. The area has over 15,000 small landowners, so they have been really small patches of land that have been covered in metal frames and then wrapped in thick layers of essentially cling film to try to maintain the humidity and reduce erosion from wind. And it's the scale of this that's mind-boggling, that these little jigsaw-shaped pieces of greenhouses that are individually maybe only 100 meters across are tucked into an area that expands to be bigger than Britain's second biggest city, Birmingham. It's 32,000 hectares, 320 square kilometers. It runs from the mountains to the sea. Every area of flat space is exploited. And it's so huge, it's clearly visible from space. And when we talk about agricultural landscapes, we often think about ecosystems that have developed over hundreds or thousands of years. Ones that are deeply ingrained in culture, like in the UK or the US. And that's not to say that they don't have big environmental impacts. They obviously do. But in Spain, it's different. This region, Almería, was one of the poorest in the 1940s. It was facing severe famine. And it's modern agriculture that's taken this region to be now one of Spain's richest. And that economic transformation has completely changed the local environment. There's now virtually no natural ecosystems left. And the social and environmental impacts of that transformation are bound to be really deeply ingrained in the region's future.
Now we're all ears to unravel the complexities. Could you shed light on the environmental consequences you witnessed during your exploration of Almería? How do these challenges intertwine with the success story of its agricultural prowess?
So I think some of the environmental impacts are really obvious. There's huge areas of natural scrubland that have been replaced by farmland. And that's like I said earlier, no different to what's happened in places like the UK and the US. Here it's just far more obvious because it's a massive area of plastic. It's not a sort of culturally ingrained landscape that we're used to and that we've come to love. Other environmental impacts are harder to spot, but they're there if you look. So the biggest one is the plastic. Every year, about 3,500 tons of this plastic have to be replaced. The plastic only lasts a couple of years because it gets degraded by UV. Much of it is disposed of in landfill or it's incinerated for energy, and a very, very small amount is recycled because it's very expensive to recycle. But a lot of it is illegally discarded in the environment, and that clogs up rivers, it pollutes soils as microplastics, for example, and it often finds its way into the sea and causes big problems there as well. There was a case of a whale washing up on the coast with 17 kilograms of greenhouse plastic in its stomach. At the same time, there's a problem with water. So rain only provides about a fifth of the region's agricultural water demand. The rest is pumped up from aquifers deep below the surface. And that drastically reduces the available water for the local human population. There's now increasing reliance on desalination and what's needed by nature as well. And added to that, the agrochemicals, fertilizers, and pesticides that are pumped into the soil in greenhouses leach down into the groundwater, polluting it. And now the farmers have to dig down to tunnel down over a kilometer to find a freshwater lens that they can then use. But even that is now starting to be polluted. And often from the sky, you'll see these water tanks between the greenhouses that are almost glowing turquoise. And that's because they have to add chemicals like bleach to kill the algae that would otherwise grow and clog up their irrigation systems. And those algae are using the nutrients that have leached down because of all of the fertilizer. So the system is completely polluted. And added to that, there's a sort of hidden problem that people don't talk about. The region exports around 3.5 million tons of fruit and veg a year. That's a huge amount. But actually, most of that is water. So a cucumber, for example, is 96% water. And other vegetables are all over 90% water. So there's a huge amount of water being lost. And that's not rainwater. That's mostly from deep underground. That's a water resource that takes a really long time to be replenished, and maybe can't be replenished in the way that it's been overexploited. Added to that, climate change is making the weather even more unpredictable. So that water loss is increasingly damaging potentially. So the region does produce a huge amount of fruit and vegetables for Europe. Out of season in particular, but I'm not sure I would call that a success. I think it's come at a huge environmental cost, and it's now a system that has been maintained in a way that it's very hard to see how that could be adapted to become sustainable.
In your exploration of Almeria, what were the visual cues of the environmental consequences you observed, particularly with the context of the success story of its agricultural prowess? How do you translate those visual narratives into a broader understanding of the challenges faced by the region?
So being a drone photographer, I was immediately drawn to the scale and the patterns of the landscape seen from above. But I'm particularly interested as well in what I call the democratization of the skies that's been brought about by affordable photographic drones. But for me, the most striking images I saw there were the impact of agricultural systems on migrant workers whose lives are tied into the agricultural system there. These workers are forced to migrate because of the impacts of historical and continuing contemporary actions of powerful and wealthy nations like the UK and the European Union. And because of political and climate instability that those organizations have caused have put in place over hundreds of years. And these migrants, they come to Europe, they arrive in Europe hoping for better lives, but they end up working in back-breaking jobs with no job security for far less than a livable wage, and they're forced to live in unsanitary conditions. And it's these chabolas, they're called in the region in Spain, that you can see from above, that are, you know, these houses are made out of discarded plastic from the greenhouses. These people are living surrounded by plastic. Basically, their lives are then entwined with the systems that are causing them to live essentially illegally. And the Spanish government and the police mostly turn a blind eye, because that system needs that cheap labour to exploit to be able to make a profit. But their settlements, despite that, are still at constant risk of being bulldozed at the whim of local authorities. So for me, none of what I saw is a success story. It's a success story for a very small minority of already very wealthy people. But I mentioned before that there's 15,000 farmers who own land in that region. You know, many of them are going out of business because they can't afford to be there anymore. Their land is being bought up by large international conglomerates. And that is because of the accumulation of wealth at the top of the supply chain. So cucumbers that farmers sell for 8p a kilo, for example, are sold in supermarkets in the UK for £1.80 a kilo. And that huge markup is all profit for transport and grocery store corporations in the UK and outside of the region. So it might be a success story in terms of capitalism, but that is the root of all of the social and environmental problems in the region and countless other systems like that across the world.
Considering your dual roles as a photographer and researcher, Neil, how do you believe the visual storytelling aspect contributes to our understanding of Almería's current situation? What unique perspectives can photography offer in conveying the urgency of sustainable practices and the complex relationship between prosperity and environmental challenges in this region?
So, yeah, I've worked for almost 20 years as a researcher, and moving now into visual storytelling, I have that experience of knowing the underlying science behind these systems and their impacts on the environment and social systems. But that story in terms of science and facts being untold. So it's been interesting exploring visual storytelling as a way to get these stories out and available to the public. I think Almería is a great example of part of our food supply system that's hidden, something that we just don't really know about. And it is only an example. It's really only a tiny piece of this huge puzzle of how Western civilization is exploiting other systems. And it's things that we don't often know about. Things that if they happened in our own back garden, we would be really shocked about it. Rightly so. We wouldn't accept it. But because it happens out of sight, it's easy not to see, or it's easy to ignore it. And I'm not putting that blame on individuals. I'm putting that blame on the entire system. It's something that the system wants to keep in place. I think visual storytelling is vital for showcasing how our system needs to change, essentially picking apart the long history of colonialism that's been ingrained from Western society across the globe. And I think if you just imagine the system in Almería, visualize that system and how our demand has caused that system to develop. And then you go down to the supermarket and you look at where our fruit and vegetables come from. You see Kenya, you see Peru, you see Colombia, you see Cuba, you see the Dominican Republic, we see New Zealand. Earlier last year, we found some of the cheapest potatoes that you can buy in the UK available in in supermarkets here that had come from New Zealand, and that just shouldn't be the case. And I think it's just become too easy for a lack of visuals, a lack of understanding, to just cloud where our food comes from, and where the roots of our demands for food go across the world. So I think visual storytelling is a really powerful way of catching people's attention and getting them to think about how the facts of the matter, the facts of these systems, actually affect people's lives and affect the environment on a daily basis.
Neil, photography has the power to evoke emotions and inspire action. How do you believe your visual storytelling from Almeria can impact public awareness and understanding of the environmental and social issues faced by the region? Are there specific stories or images that you hope will resonate with your audience?
I think photography has this really powerful ability to educate and to move people. I think there's a lot that we, the public, don't know about how our society has developed, how our food is made, for example. I think on the one hand, being made aware and knowing is one thing, but then taking that knowledge to act is another. And we need emotive imagery that sticks with us. We need that connection from knowing to the next time we make a decision, that knowledge coming back up and, you know, being enough to nudge us to change the way that we do things, change how we eat, how we buy, what we vote for, the conversations that we have with friends and family. And so for me, research-led photography and videography really have that power to bridge the knowing-doing gap, if you will. I think it's very easy to blame the public for our choices, for the demands for our products. But it's really a failure of our governments and those who are meant to look after us that we have to make choices between things that we know are bad for us and our planet and people in other countries, or people, you know, in our country in harsh situations. And I hope really that my images help people to realize that our systems need to change, and that the people in power have a responsibility to look after us, and not to be looking after the profits of a small number of increasingly rich elite. So on the one hand, it's depressing that the impacts in Almeria are system-wide. You know, it's not just plastics, it's not just modern slavery, it's entire systems. But on the other hand, it should be a cause for hope that, you know, seeing these systems, seeing how huge they are from this imagery of the scale of the problem, you know, there should be hope that if we change a system, we can affect everything. It's not about single solutions to single problems. It never has been. That's been a distraction. So I think the imagery I'd hope to resonate is the imagery of systems that have developed that shouldn't be there.
As a researcher, you bring a unique combination of academic rigor and artistic expression to your work. How do you balance the scientific exploration of environmental issues with the artistic interpretation through your photography? In what ways do these two aspects complement each other in conveying the complexities of Almeria's agricultural landscape?
I think that's a really good question. I view myself as a photojournalist, so my practice as a researcher and as a photographer are entrenched in facts. And I don't use imagery that isn't what I see. But obviously, there's still artistic expression, which is what your question was getting at there, really, that I choose which images to take and what to frame. And I started out, I think, I guess, feeling that they were two quite opposing approaches, to have an objective analytical approach that's free from bias and subjectivity in terms of the science, versus an intentionally subjective and creative approach in image making, using metaphor and implication, for example. I guess I think it was easy for me to feel that I needed to force a narrative to spell out exactly what the viewer should feel looking at my images. This is what's happening. This is how you should feel. But I've realized that, you know, that this doesn't create what we call salient stories, stories that stick with a viewer, that then help them to make that leap, that connection, and to change their behavior. And people really need to make their own connections. They need to engage with a story to remember it, and for it to be like, that sort of, that realization moment, for them to then feel that and then go away and tell people, for it to change how they behave. So for me, blending these two backgrounds of science and image making, it does involve a deep research-led process of investigating and planning a story, and it is followed by a creative, emotional, artistic expression of what I'm hoping to view. But for me, it really is a blend of those two that needs to not overly force a narrative. So it can be based on science and facts, but then the image making, the images themselves should be eye-catching. They should get people to stop and think. I think scientists have this tendency to try to force information down people's throats to make sure that they get the details of it, because sometimes it can be very complex. But I think if you're telling a story in the right way, that jump from the facts to the implications of what it means, that can be guided, but you don't have to force people down a path. So I think in my photojournalism, they meld together, the science and the image making, really importantly. So I've had to learn how to grow those two aspects together, and I think that's something I'm still learning, but it's something I'm very much enjoying.
In your journey through Almeria's landscapes, did you encounter any moments that challenged or reshaped your initial perceptions or assumptions about the region's agricultural practices and their impact on water resources? How did those experiences influence the narrative you sought to capture through your lenses? And did they lead to any unexpected insights or revelations?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I hadn't realized was how little money farmers make. And so the situation with the impacts on social systems and on the environment is not driven by local greed. It's not driven by a desire to make a lot of money at the expense of migrants and the environment. It's often by the 15,000 people who own these small greenhouses, it's driven by a desire to have an income and to look after their families. The situation is really tough for many of them, making 8 pence a kilo for cucumbers that are then sold at £1.80 in UK supermarkets. So that, in terms of the research I was doing, was quite eye-opening, really. Although I didn't have the opportunity to interview any farmers, they refused to be on camera, understandably. I think it changed the way that I wanted to display that, if I could, those stories. And it's a region I'm really keen to go back to. And so I think being aware of that and being empathetic is really important.
Neil, as we wrap up our conversation, could you share a memorable or impactful story from your time in Almeria that perhaps didn't make it into the photographs but left a lasting impression on you? What personal reflections or takeaways do you carry from your experiences in Almeria? And how do they shape your perspective on the broader issues surrounding water, agriculture, and sustainability?
Yeah, one of the reasons I really want to go back is that so I was there with a couple of colleagues, and we made some friends in one of the settlements of migrant workers. And I spent quite a lot of time with an older woman from Morocco, who had no papers, couldn't return to Morocco, couldn't leave the country. She had been working in the strawberry farms in Huelva, actually, which is a region about 5 hours away, where many of the women work. It's mostly the men who work in the fruit and veg farms in Almeria. But she had hurt her knees, couldn't find access to healthcare, and so wasn't able to work. And she took us in and tried to feed us and showed us her small house, which was built from breeze blocks and corrugated iron. And just having that connection with someone who otherwise to me would have been a shocking story, but having that personal connection with someone who I'm still now in contact with, really brought it home to me, the impact that our demands have on people, real people who are, you know, they have emotions, they struggle with the weather, they struggle with what to eat, they're just people wanting to live safe lives and look after their loved ones. And that is the most obvious thing, but that connection for me was something that it didn't make it into the stories, and it won't, because it's not possible to really show them anonymously. I'm hoping to go back and look into working with them in other ways and trying to bridge that human gap between people living there and people working there. But that was the really shocking thing. You can read about greenhouses, you can read about pollution and environmental loss, but it's the human side of things that you can't really prepare for until you see the conditions they're living in Europe, in the south of Spain, in a very wealthy region, and that system is just kind of let alone and allowed to develop because of what we want. That was the really shocking thing. And in a way, I'm really sad not to be able to have got that into the story visually. But it's something I'm continuing to work on.
Considering your expertise, Neil, where do you stand now, given the environmental and social issues you've uncovered? What does the future hold for Almeria, its people, and the fragile balance between prosperity and peril?
That is a really good question. Because it is a systems level issue, because it's not a small problem that can be fixed with a single solution. It's something I've really struggled with in the 6 months since I was there, wondering what it is that we need to do to be able to make things better. If we all stopped buying fruit and vegetables out of season, the systems there would collapse, the economy would collapse. The workers whose lives depended on agriculture to have a better life than they have in their home countries would not have an income, however unstable that is. If we suddenly stopped extracting water from the aquifer, it will take a very long time to recover. So, you know, I think there are some things that can be changed to give incremental benefits, like changing the type of plastics that's used on the greenhouses, like precision irrigation, integrated pest management, that means fewer pesticides. Those can make small transformations, but they're really not transformations, they're small incremental changes that probably don't even do enough to reduce the increasing demand year on year. So it's really hard. I really think the first step is to just be more aware of it and to be having conversations about it, and not to be made to feel like it's the consumer's fault. So, you know, I keep saying the word systems, but just talking about the systems that we've developed, this is just one example of our global food systems that are just really screwed up. They shouldn't exist. Having those conversations and being aware of them is the next step. My biggest concern really is climate change, which is happening far faster than we previously thought it would. This is an arid system that, under the projections of climate models, will become even more arid. What is going to happen to the people and the environment there as resources get scarcer? I think that is the real concern. And it's a discussion that we need to feed into our response to climate change, which in the West is so far woefully inadequate. So yeah, be aware, talk about it, do your research. And I think we can start to think about where we buy things from. That doesn't mean an all right boycott, but it does mean demanding answers from the big profit making companies, like our grocery stores and the transport companies, to ask what they're doing to reinvest in the systems that they're exploiting and profiting from. So yeah, holding people accountable, I think, is the best way to have those system level changes, transformational stuff come into play.
Many thanks to my guest, Neil Hathaway, for sharing his insights from his lenses and research. Making Waves is a Next Blue production, and our editors today were Yup Janssen and Dennis Wander. My name is Vincent Ede. To learn more about Next Blue, visit our website at next.blue. You can also follow our journey on all our social media platforms. Drop us a line. Our handle is @NextBlueStories.